is 1, 2, 3.
Increasingly, living on Earth means living with robots, sharing the planet with ever more intelligent machines that perform tasks from the mundane, like the robo lawnmower that cuts your grass, to the highly specialized, like robo-docs that do surgery. The word robot comes from the Slavic word rabota, or work, and was first used by Czech science fiction writer Karel Čapek in 1921. Ever since, robots have stirred and captured our imaginations.
Star sapphires take a week to crystallize properly. Would diamond or emeralds do?
We are all, by any practical definition of the words, foolproof and incapable of error.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger.
R2-D2, you know better than to trust a strange computer.
Robo-sapiens, lifelike robots that obey our every command, are still the stuff of Hollywood. But at the just-concluded Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, robots for the home were being hailed as the next big thing. It's an industry poised to amaze. To see firsthand where things are headed, check out MIT's Humanoid Robotics Group. Here on the Cambridge, Massachusetts campus, grad student Aaron Edsinger has just put the finishing touches on one of the world's most advanced robots.
This is my PhD work. This is a humanoid robot named Domo.
Domo means?
Domo means thanks in Japanese, but it's also the name of a song, Domo Arigato, Mr. Roboto.
Domo looks a lot like a human. It's got eyeballs, and it's looking at me.
Yep.
And it's got this arm with biceps and triceps. Put a skin over it. And
yeah, it's close. It has the human form. And, you know, we very deliberately made it look somewhat human-like because you can very quickly read its body posture, its eye gaze, and these are cues that help for interaction with it.
Is it perceiving me?
It can. At the moment, the visual cortex is sort of switched off. But when everything is running, it can see you, it can interact with you, reach to you, respond to your physical contact. What you see here is that I can grab the arm, and it can sense that, and it can respond to it when I push on it. So it's actually sensing a person's interaction with it. And the idea is that it's sort of a partner robot. It works with you to do something that you'd, a manual task.
No, it's missing a very important part. It's got no legs.
No legs. Yep. Yeah. Legs are hard. We don't focus on the mobility so much, although I think that's the next obvious step.
That would be major domo.
Major domo, yes.
So what's the computing power of this?
This is actually about 15 computers that go into running the robot when everything is turned on. Now, most of that is for computer vision. The motor control actually doesn't take a whole lot of computation.
When you were working and building this, well, did you ever think it was another person? Did you ever react to it and started asking it things or expecting it things?
Sure, yeah. I mean, you know that it's a piece of metal and motors, and you know all the code that's going on behind it, but every now and then, it acts in a way that you don't expect. At a certain level, it's hard to know exactly what's going to happen to it, how it's going to respond, because its behavior is not scripted. It's really responding to its environment and reacting to that. And so, sometimes you get that glimpse of it being very lifelike.
Well, thank you very much. Congratulations.
Thank you. Domo arigato, Mr. Roboto. Domo.
Domo arigato, Mr. Roboto. Grad student Aaron Edsinger built Domo at MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory. The lab's director is Rodney Brooks. He's also chief technology officer of iRobot, a company that produces robotic vacuum cleaners. You might have seen Brooks in the movie Fast, Cheap, and Out of Control, playing himself, an eccentric designer of robots.
When I switched the things on, the lights flashed and the machine came to life. It moved. Some people believe that we are going to replace ourselves by building these machines, and that may be.
Rodney Brooks' office in a space-age building at MIT is a study in controlled chaos. We sit on a couch opposite a wall with a poster of Fast, Cheap, and Out of Control and a photo of Brooks and a robot playing with a slinky.
Yeah, that was a robot named Cog, and humanoid form, but no legs. And we were really interested, and still are, in having robots with arms that are safe to be in the same space as, whereas a robot in a factory with an arm, you don't want to be near. And so trying to make robots that are safe to interact with so that ultimately we can have robots manipulating things in the world, doing stuff with us and partnering with us. And for us baby boomers, This is going to be important in our old age.
Oh, really? Why?
Well, if you look at the demographics of the world, there's going to be many, many more elderly compared to working-age people. Same problem with our Social Security financing. And where are we going to get all the people to help us in our homes and in our hospitals? We're going to have more robotics help and assistance.
And right now, the state of the art, are we there?
Well, we're not there yet, but I think we're making good progress towards it. You know, we're starting to see robots in people's homes. Now, by the standards of 30 years from now, those robots are fairly simple. They're home cleaning robots. My company, iRobot, happens to be the biggest manufacturer of them.
You're making basically vacuum cleaners.
Yeah, but they're robotic vacuum cleaners. You press the clean button and you walk away and they clean the house.
Oh, so that thing really works.
Yeah. Of course it works.
But I'm thinking, you know, the Jetsons, where they have Rosie the robot.
So we're not going to have Rosie anytime soon. But you got to think, what were computers like 30 years ago? What are computers like now?
Well, we're in the William H. Gates building at MIT, and Bill Gates has an article in the January issue of Scientific America, which he talks about the future of robots. And he says they're going to be as ubiquitous as computers.
Yeah, he makes the analogy that between robots today and computers when Microsoft got started. And his company was one of the leading forces in changing what computers could do.
So what do we need to accomplish between where we are now and your vacuum cleaner robot and the robots that kind of have arms and swing and spray paint? And where are we going to be in 10 years?
Well, I say there's two really critical things that we as researchers should be working on at the universities. We need the visual object recognition capabilities of a 2-year-old child and the manual dexterity of a 6-year-old child. They're the two capabilities that I think are important to go after in the research domain right now. We're making progress on both of them, although both have a long history of not necessarily great success over the years.
People think about robots. I think they think about humanoid robots, that is, things that look like us, that we create in our own images. When you think robot, is that what you're thinking of?
I could believe either way. It could be that we will want robots with human form, or we could have robots with other forms, but we will want to be able to interact with them socially. And let me tell you what I mean by that. We interact with our dogs socially. We know what our dog is looking at, what the dog is paying attention to. Our dogs know what our gaze direction is. They understand us. We understand them. I think we're going to need that intuitive understanding of what our robots are trying to do. And our robots are going to need the intuitive understanding of what it is we're trying to do and then coexist with us and help us. And if they don't do that, no one's going to buy it.
We design these robots. It seems like we design them in our own image. And that when we try to give them intelligence and maybe even consciousness, that it's really not saying what is a robot. We're asking the question, what is human?
Well, that's, I think, one of the biggest drivers for us in my research lab here is being what is human and trying to understand that by building models. For me, the most remarkable thing has been how simple the social interaction parts are to build. Now, what's hard is object recognition, manipulation, the stuff that 2-year-olds can do.
So look out 100 years. I know that's the stuff of science fiction. Are we going to have robot people?
Well, we don't have robot birds yet. We've got really good machines that fly, but we don't have machines that fly like birds. So I think we get the essence, but whether we go to the trouble of making it identical to a human, I don't know. Now, could it be 100 years from now that we have robots that are truly intelligent and true beings? In principle, absolutely. You know, I, as a sort of strong scientist, think that we are machines. You and I are machines. We're made of biomolecules, biomolecules that interact through the laws of chemistry and physics. So we are machines. So in principle, it seems that we should be able to have machines built out of other stuff which are intelligent like us. Now, another question is, are we humans smart enough to build such machines? That's an open question. You know, you look at a raccoon. A raccoon's very dexterous with its hands. You know, it can unlock things and get into places and stuff. But I don't know anyone who's looked at a raccoon and thought, hey, one day that raccoon's going to build a robot raccoon just like itself. Right? So, you know, you can imagine the guys from Alpha Centauri from another solar system are up in their UFOs looking down, and they're looking down at MIT, and they're saying, oh, look at those little professors there. They think they're going to build robot versions themselves. Aren't they cute?
But it seems that this is as much philosophy as physics?
It's a mixture of the two, and therefore it's very murky, and therefore many scientists feel very uncomfortable about it.
How do you feel about it?
I feel fascinated. What could be more fun except going to space?
Dr. Brooks, I want to thank you very much.
Thank you.
Rodney Brooks is director of MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory and chief technology officer of iRobot. For photos of him and Aaron Edsinger's RoboSapien Domo, log on to our website, loe.org. Next week on Living on Earth, the 2008 presidential campaign is heating up, but then again for Al Gore, so is the planet.
I've fallen out of love with politics. I'm not hungering to ever be a candidate again, and really do not anticipate any circumstances in which I would be. But I'm involved in a different kind of campaign.
Al Gore takes his climate change show on the road, and we go along next time on Living on Earth. Living on Earth is produced by the World Media Foundation. Our crew includes Ashley Ahern, Eileen Balinski, Ian Gray, Ingrid Lobet, Emily Taylor, Peter Thompson, and Jeff Young, with help from Bobby Bascom and Kelly Cronin. Our interns are Paige Doty and Megan Vigent. Dennis Foley is our technical director. Our executive producer is Steve Kerwood. Allison Lirish-Dean composed our themes. You can find this at loe.org.
I am Bruce Gellerman. Thank you for listening.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Funding for Living on Earth comes from the National Science Foundation, supporting coverage of emerging science, and Stonyfield Farm, organic yogurt and smoothies. Stonyfield pays its farmers not to use artificial growth hormones on their cows. Details at stonyfield.com. Support also comes from you, our listeners, the Ford Foundation, the Town Creek Foundation, and the Saunders Hotel Group of Boston's Lenox and Copley Square Hotels, serving you and the environment while helping preserve the past and protect the future. 800-225-7676.
PRI, Public Radio International.